Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark, and my guest is a first-timer in the book club, somebody I've met through the ACP Slack, which we might talk about later. It's a warm welcome to Zach Cahill.
Hello.
Hello, Zach. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Great to be here.
I should say Zach Cahill.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah, very good.
Four stars.
My Irish heritage is letting me down. Zach, thanks for coming on the book club. Honestly, we've got a fascinating book to talk about in just a moment. It's a short one, but it's so good. But anyway, I'm tipping my hand too early. Before we do that, it's your first time on the book club, and we do 2000 AD or comics origin stories. What were your first comics?
My first comics, it's one of my earliest reading memories is my dad reading the Ditko and Stan Lee Spider-Man. You know, there was some kind of reprints that were done, and he was reading those stories to me in bed when I must have been really, really small. And I really vividly remember the one where they have the supercomputer that works out the identity of Peter Parker and then goes on a rampage around the school. That's like one of my earliest memories. So I've been reading them since I was before I could read.
Bedtime stories with Stan and Steve Ditko.
Absolutely.
And Dad. Fantastic stuff. Was it to Marvel UK reprints?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's what it would have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were so good, those black and white reprints.
They were amazing. Yeah.
And did you, are you a Galaxy's Greatest Comic? Are you a 2000 AD fan?
I would say I was always a Judge Dredd fan.
Right.
And I was very into Judge Dredd when I was small. My dad had a lot of the annuals, the 2000 AD annuals, and he had a ton of the American reprints with the Bolland covers. He had all of those. So I was more of a reader of Dredd than I was of the magazine. For some reason, the non-Dredd story I can remember from my childhood is Harry 20 on the High Rock.
Yeah,
that's a great story. That's just because I love prison stories and I love sort of near future dystopia. So put those two together. And I reread that recently and it was fantastic. But in terms of like reading 2000 AD regularly, no, not probably since I was very, very small. I tried to get into it sometime last year and fell off the wagon. So I'd say I'm much more of a Dredd fan than a 2000 AD fan.
And we're going to talk a bit about your own comics when we get to the end of the episode. But current comics that you read, what takes your fancy these days?
I read a lot of sort of the indie small press stuff. And I tend to just get obsessed with one artist and then go down the rabbit hole on them. So for now, right now, it's Paul Gulacy. So I've been just buying up everything I can on eBay.
Right.
With Gulacy. In terms of keeping up with the regular stuff, not really. Like some of the Transformers, G.I. Joe, Energon universe stuff I read. But I'm not really keeping up to date with what Spider-Man's doing. I've read some of the Absolute Batman, but I'm more indie stuff and old stuff, I would say.
Paul Gulacy, our mutual friend Tony Osmond has infected you with his passion.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed. Really obsessed. It's just great stuff.
Right, let's get to it. Let's get to today's book. Like I say, you've chosen a beauty. What are we talking about today for the book club?
So we're talking about We Three, written by Grant Morrison, drawn by Frank Quitely, with colours by Jamie Grant and the legend Todd Klein lettering. A small but perfectly formed book, I think.
Yes, just the three issues from DC Vertigo in 2004 and then a 2005 trade collection. We'll just do version control. I have got the Kindle version of the deluxe. Well, they call it the deluxe edition.
Okay.
Although it doesn't have any extra features. It's just the three issues.
I've got what looks like the original.
The original trade.
Yeah.
Cool. So that we're working off the same one then, more or less. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about versions at the end because there are various different reprints of it. And we'll also note, our usual note when we get to Grant Morrison, that Grant prefers they and them pronouns, and we'll try and use them, but we will, I know I will probably miss them from time to time, so apologies in advance. So, Zach, we messaged each other on the Awesome Comics Podcast Slack, and you suggested a few titles And we sort of narrowed it, you narrowed it down. You sort of like whittled them down.
Yeah.
Why did we three rise to the top of that list?
I just think it's close to a perfect comic. And I think you can look at these guys have worked together on other things and people would probably see All-Star Superman as their masterpiece. But in terms of a comic that you could hand to someone who has never read a comic before, you know, who that's what question you always get. Like, well, what should I read if I've never read a comic before? You're not going to give them Superman issue 5000. You want to give them something that is not overly intimidating, that is a self-contained story, that gives them something to latch onto, but at the same time is uniquely comics. Like, this does stuff that can only be done in a comic. And like all great comics, it's better than the sum of its parts. You know, even the story is actually fairly sparse, but when it's combined with the visual storytelling of Quitely, I mean, it's just an amazing piece of work. You know, I think it is near perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. When did you first come across it? When did you read it?
I think I read it around the time it came out. I probably got put onto it by the iFanboy, which was like one of the original comics YouTubes, you know?
Yeah.
That was around that time. They kind of single-handedly like dragged me back into comics. And it was that around that time, it was the real era of the writer, you know, it was Brian Michael Bendis and Brian K. Vaughan and guys like that, but also the widescreen comics, you know, the Brian Hitch, which this is sort of, I suppose, a kind of a widescreen comic, isn't it? That was the look you associate with the time. So yeah, I probably read it around the time that it came out, and it's one of those ones I probably return to every couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about widescreen comics. I can't remember who does the quote on the back cover that says it's like an action movie, a perfect action movie, because it is quite action movie in a way, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, with the quote in the back of mind, this is true. A violent reworking of The Incredible Journey.
Right.
Or Homeward Bound. It's kind of Homeward Bound meets Akira.
Yeah.
With a bit of Watership Down maybe thrown in.
In case anybody hasn't read it then, give us the setup.
So you're following three pets, a dog, a cat, and a rabbit, who have been engineered into military weapons. They've been biomechanically enhanced. And you can see a sort of manga anime influence to the design of them. And they basically bust out of their lab and they decide they want to go home. And there kind of is no home. It becomes an ambiguous thing that they have to figure out. But they're on the run from the military and they're on the run from other even scarier enhanced animals. And that's it. It's a chase. It's a chase story.
And it's a perfect one.
It is.
Three issues, three animals, as you say. What's that film called that you said? It's The Incredible Journey, isn't it?
Incredible Journey, or Homeward Bound, I think it's called.
Homeward Bound, right, yeah. Three animals on the run in their sort of mecha or their mech tech suits.
Yeah.
They are, as you say, they're weapons, so they're quite deadly. And also, I suppose, importantly, if we talk about Grant Morrison's writing, they can sort of talk. Most of the story... that's not told in Frank Quitely's images is told in their broken English.
They speak in a broken English, and it's almost the vocabulary that you think a dog probably does have. You know, a dog probably knows sit, whatever. You know, he probably has a handful of words. And you know, the rabbit has even less vocabulary. Like in the hierarchy of who's smartest, the rabbit is at the bottom, and he's usually trying to calm down the dog and the cat and stop them from fighting with each other. And he brings out a lot of character in each of the animals. The cat is that kind of snarky. He's along for the ride, but he doesn't really like it. You know, he's a bit pissed off about things. He's taking a bit more pleasure and delight in the spectacular violence that happens. Where the dog is constantly saying, good dog. He's asking everyone if he's a good dog. And he's constantly wants this reassurance, and he's constantly trying to do the right thing. But he does horrific things because of the situation he's been put in and the thing that he's been turned into. So he manages to get so much character from these handful of words that the characters say.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, the dog is sort of, as you say, the brightest, the sort of the leader. The cat is, in a way, a typical cat. Like you mentioned anime. This is like a ninja cat.
Yes.
Prone to sudden outbursts of violence.
Yes. Well, what I realized as I was reading it is, you know, animals kind of have superpowers. Like if you think of the dog's ability to smell, a dog doesn't just know what's who's been on the street. They know who's been up and down the street for the whole day. It's almost like time travel. And a cat's ability to move with such agility and all of that, like that is basically, they're basically superpowers even before you add on all these enhanced technology that they've been given. And so when they're showing this, particularly when the cat is like attacking guys, it's kind of just not that separate from what a cat would actually be able to do, bar the, you know, firing his claws at people and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Amazing stuff. And then the rabbit is the rabbit sort of military superpower is that it sort of drops bombs, lays bombs.
Yes. Yes. From his little rabbit bum. It's really cleverly done. You sort of see, it's a rule of three thing. You see the rabbit's bum and you kind of, they've really drawn attention to that design. So surely something's going to happen there. And then at one point he does a little pellet, which is in this world, it's basically a mine or an explosive device. And then it comes back at the end in a really key and heroic moment. Like it's so brilliantly set up. There's another example for such a simple story. There's just so much, there's so many like layers going on.
Always with that wonderful little, the rabbit says, uh-oh.
Uh-oh, yeah. Yeah.
Grant Morrison's writing. Now, Grant has limited themselves with the vocabulary because there's only a very small palette of words that the animals use. And most of the story, apart from when we get the human moments, but most of the story is going to be told with that limited palette. It's an astonishing feat of writing, this book.
Yeah. I think it almost reflects what he's almost doing as a writing exercise is how spare can I make the story in order to let Quitely's art just breathe and elevate it, you know? Essentially, animals break out, get chased, get away, or whatever, you know, get into a couple of scrapes. That's it. And it's the same with the language. There's no big florid captions. There is some human dialogue, but you're mostly with the animals. And as you say, it's super, super sparse and stripped down. And it's like if there were a non-remarkable artist on this, I don't think we would be talking about it. But it's just that combination of the two of just giving Quitely a framework to do all these amazing storytelling techniques over the top of it. So it's like the writing almost just doesn't draw away. It doesn't distract, I guess, from the artwork in a way.
Yeah. It's not all that many episodes ago that I did Animal Man, Grant Morrison's Animal Man, with Colin. And here we again, I think we see Grant's interest in animal welfare. And clearly they're very opposed to the idea of animal experimentation, quite rightly.
Yeah.
This is a story sort of about animal experimentation. As you say, they break out of a lab at the start in the first book because they're scheduled to be destroyed. And with the help of a sympathetic lab scientist, they break out. Can you see there sort of like the similar themes to Animal Man, the concern about animals?
That's absolutely there. What struck me as interesting this time, though, was so obviously you're really empathizing with these characters and, you know, you really get to know them and there's like heartbreaking moments, but there's carnage of other animals. And that's almost shown in this really, distanced, depersonalized way. Like there's a bunch of rabbits just getting mowed down and they're almost in soft focus. Or there's bits where the mice are all getting kind of like chopped up and it's just off screen. But there's just something kind of impersonal about it. It's just like, that's just happening. And I don't know. I mean, that's obviously all very thought through, but it's the first time I really noticed that. I just thought it was interesting in a book that's clearly got these animal kind of welfare themes and how the violence of the, like the bit where the cat chops the other dog's head off is almost, you'd miss it the first time. Do you know what I mean? The hunter's dog and the cat just kind of does like a Wolverine slash and you see the dog's head coming off, but it's not in this super gory, oh my God, close up. It's just like, it's just happening. So I just thought the difference in how the non-super animals were treated made me think of maybe how we turned a blind eye to, I don't know, battery farming. And I'm sure all this stuff is going on in the back of Grant's head.
Hmm.
Because I think this is a very deliberate book. I think everything is there for a reason that's got a choice behind it.
Yes, it's another sort of personal book for Grant, it feels like. As you say, there are choices about this covering this aspect of animal welfare. If we turn to the art, before we get to some of the real challenges that Grant asks or Grant gives to Frank quietly, we mentioned as a sort of Japanese sort of look and feel to it. Can you tell us a little bit about Frank Quitely's artwork on this book?
So he's really interesting because he's completely singular. Like, you know a Frank Quitely image immediately identifiable, but he's also almost a 50-50 mix of Otomo and Mobius. Like, for me, like, there's a little bit of Jeff Darrow as well, but looking at this book particularly, it's European Katsuhiro Otomo. It's all of the tech and all of the physics, just the physics is so correct. Like, someone gets shot in the head and you're just seeing the head knock back and then the blood spatter where their head was. And you can just almost is animated in how perfect the physics work. And that's so Otomo. But then he's also got this clear line, European approach. And I know he's a big fan of Mobius. But it's just a beautiful, beautiful looking book. I mean, I can't believe how it looks so hard to draw as someone who, you know, tries to be a cartoonist. I just can't imagine the work that went into doing this. And he just seems like a guy who's incapable of drawing badly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is just amazing. I mean, we talked about Frank doing the Hondo City stories in the sort of Dreadverse. I did that with James Knight, and we may well be coming back to those. We may be getting to All-Star Superman at some point on the podcast as well. But his work is just so beautiful. As you say, it's sometimes difficult to see exactly how he's doing it because it is just so magnificent. And then if we talk about his storytelling and some of the devices he's using in this book. I mean, you've mentioned the confrontation with the farmer's dog.
Yes.
And how it's sort of delivered in, you know, it's stuff that happens almost between panels, isn't it?
Yes. You're just capturing the speed. It's the way it's trying to capture how a cat perceives time.
And, yeah.
You know, that big spread. I mean, people should be looking at this at home really to get the full picture, but where we're seeing the normal comic panels turned kind of sideways and you're seeing these moments of just extreme violence, but then outside of those panels in the gutters, the cat is just traveling through. And Grant is obviously someone who really is obsessed with time and a lot of his stuff is about time. So this is stuff that they're thinking about all the time. It just looks like something you've never seen this before in comics. But how are you depicting an alien mind, you know? A creature that perceives the world in a way that is completely different to us. And I don't know how much came from Quitely and how much came from Morrison. I don't know if it was like 50-50. But like Quitely has explored this type of unusual storytelling in other books. I've got to think a lot of it has come from him.
Right.
So I don't know if Morrison just tasked him with show cat time. And Morrison's also talks a lot about The Matrix, and this is not that long after The Matrix and the sequels came out. And you can see a lot of that in there. There's some bullet time for sure. And so that was kind of in the ether at the time. I think that went to different ways of depicting a moment, you know, a specific moment in time is very, very bullet time-ish.
Yeah. I mean, I was fascinated by his camera angles about when he switches to overhead views or to point of view views.
The point of views on the when you're with the animals, a lot of time you don't get full figure shot. When you're in the point of view of the animals, you're just getting shoes. You're just getting people's shoes, which really makes me think of Tom and Jerry.
Yeah,
you know, the Tom and Jerry cartoons. The people, you just see them from the ankles down. And I'm sure that was in their head, you know, that's a conscious choice. So you're seeing shoes, or you're maybe seeing the mouth, or you're maybe seeing a torso and hands. And again, it's, well, what cue is the animal getting? They're looking at your body language, right? They're maybe straining to understand what you're saying, but they're not really bothered about your eyes. They're looking at what you're doing with your hands and what you're doing with your body language. And then when you have the human scenes, it's more standard, you know, over the shoulder, two shot type comic blocking, you know? It's so clever. It's so thought through.
And then, as you've said already, there are these moments when the animals are in action, the combat scenes.
Yes.
Where, I mean, it would, as you say, be fascinating to see the scripts and the collaboration between Grant and Frank, because the way Frank uses panels within panels, the fascinating scene, as you said, where he sort of turns the panels away from us in a way. It's almost as if they're rotating away from us and then back towards us.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, you know, he talks about all that, you know, the Times Arrow and that kind of thing. It's almost like he's turned the flat into sort of two-dimensional plane of comics on its side to show the way the cat can travel through it in a different way. I mean, it's just genius.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about Bernie Kriegstein, the EC Comics artist, the American EC Comics artist. Johnny Cannon, our friend, has been doing a series on his Substack about the Kriegstein rhythm.
Mm.
There's that famous story, Master Race, where possibly for the first time, panels were broken up into sort of like vertical stripes, and it was what was happening in the gaps between those panels as a way of demonstrating, I don't know, time's progress and movement and all this. And when I was reading this last week, I was thinking, blimey, this is almost like a masterclass in the Kriegstein rhythm.
Yeah, it's Kriegstein on steroids.
Yeah.
It's not even just linear, like the one where it's in that same action sequence where we're seeing the large action shot, but then overlaid on top of it are all these little tiny panels showing close-up instances of this absolute carnage. And he really goes for it. The cat is firing claws into people's eyes, and you can see it going into their teeth and their fingernails. It's like designed to make you queasy. Or the one where the dog kind of crashes through a truck, and then you get these little inset panels of all the carnage that's going on inside the truck, and then we see the dog crashing out the back within the same panel. I think that's a different thing. That's the DeLuca effect, where you got one panel, right, where the same figure. So we're seeing that, but then you overlaid are all these tiny little super super extreme close-ups of the carnage that's going on inside that van. I mean, it's so effective.
In the first issue, they also, Grant and Frank, they in a way, they keep the animals from us.
Yeah.
You know, we sort of see them being transported back from a mission. We sort of see them in their sort of charging docks.
Yes.
But when they escape, it's almost like they're too fast for us to catch up with them.
Yeah.
We're watching on CCTV and things like that.
It's so cleverly done. Yeah. It's just that classic storytelling of withholding. You're seeing the effect of them, and you're seeing glimpses of them. You're seeing the carnage they're leaving behind, but they hold off. I think maybe until that final escape shot where it's a double page spread, right?
Yeah.
Where you see the three of them against the night sky, and that's the first time you get to see this big double spread here.
Yeah.
And you get to see the design, which I think was influenced by close up pictures of a flea or like a microscopic creature.
Right.
They've
got that sort of insectoid Japanese giant robot look, haven't they? That combination. Yeah.
But also a little awkward. Like, I think if it was an anime, it would be a little bit more sleek and a little bit cooler. You get the sense that it's actually, this stuff's heavy.
Hmm.
You know? There's an awkwardness about it that is unique.
And then you get these beautiful moments of almost sort of bucolic pastoral nature scenes with the three animals on their incredible journey out in the woods.
Yeah, there's the whole episode on the bridge, the kind of Stand By Me moment where they're crossing the railway bridge, get into a bit of a fight themselves, and then end up attacked by the swarm of these mechanized rats. It's just another amazing moment, like probably about 6-7 page sequence. That's just so well done.
Yeah.
What did you make of the what did you make of the color? Did you like the color or?
I loved it. I thought it was great. Yeah, I mean, I thought it really complemented the story, and it looks really nice in my digital edition. What about yours?
So I think it's a good job, but that's so if you're looking at it on digital, I think it's that classic thing of early digital colors. I mean, it's not even that early, it's mid-2000s, but they're still figuring it out. Like, it looks good on the screen and it just muddies up. Like, I don't know if you can see this spread.
Oh, right.
The darker stuff muddies up on the page, I think. Like, it's the only slight, because there's times where it's great and it really works, but there are pages, particularly it's the last chapter where there's a lot of stuff going out, going on in there, sort of a dump or a railway yard in the rain.
Yeah.
Like, everything's brown. And
right.
I don't know if there were a bit of time crunch happening at that point, and you know, they were under the gun a little bit, but it's just a little bit muddy, and there's other places where it looks incredible, but it is a little bit of function of just that digital color that, you know, that you get this problem. I think
do we know, was Frank drawing all this himself, or was it not himself, sorry, but
so
was it
he drew it straight to pencil, and
right,
the pencils are scanned,
right?
So I think Jamie Grant might be listed as digital ink, digital, something about digital inks or something. But basically, I think that amounts to like bumping up the levels, clearing it up a little bit.
Right.
And then he did the color job. They were working out of that same studio. I don't know if you've seen that documentary, What Do Artists Do All Day?
Yes, yeah. I have. Yeah.
So Jamie Grant was also at that studio. So I believe he was doing the coloring in quite close, you know, collaboration with Quitely. Because the coloring's doing a lot of heavy lifting. There's things where all the shading is color. So if you were to see this in black and white, that is just a blank, clear line type space. So, I mean, so much work is actually falling to Jamie Grant. And for the most part, he does an amazing job. But yeah, so I believe that they were in the studio together. The covers of these single issues are painted by Quitely. And you can see his approach, which is this much more softer, pastely, painterly approach, which if they had a whole book like that, I mean, that could have been something even more amazing in a parallel universe somewhere, maybe. But
Where did the individual issues, did they have the sort of lost posters?
Yeah, they were the covers.
So each one has a missing animal poster for the dog, the cat, and then the rabbit.
Yeah, it's great design. A great idea and great design.
Yeah, and you're right. Jamie Grant is listed as colorist and digital inker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can look up close at those lines, and it's Quitely's hand. I mean, this is the pencils just with the levels bumped up.
Yeah. You've said that this is something that only comics can deliver. Is that because of these remarkable storytelling devices they're using, breaking up panels, turning them away from us, all of that stuff?
Absolutely. Just being able to freeze a moment. And there's that question of like, how do you slow people down in comics, right? And one of the ways is just having a page where there's just so much, your eye is drawn to one place and then you realize, oh, wait, this is going on over here. And then, you know, your eye ends up roving around the page and discovering new things, you know, every time it moves to a new spot. And being able to just going backwards and forwards over the page, it rewards you, like lingering on the page and flipping back. And that's something that only comics can really capture, I think. And I just wonder, was it a reaction to what The Matrix had done to the cinema? Because I know Morrison was really obsessed with The Matrix. I've got to feel he's like, okay, fine, cinema's taking a bit of a leap forward. Okay, we've seen what you can do. Well, let's see what comics can do.
Yeah, amazing. I want to call out one particular moment, which I'm going to come back to, I think, later on, but that is after the scene on the railway bridge, there's a scene down by the river edge where the dog and the cat are by the river. The dog has tried to rescue this human and pull him out of the river. And the cat and the dog are talking, and they've got their sort of limited language where the cat is talking about, they're trying to get home.
Yes.
And the cat is saying, I know zero, ? Home is. And the dog says, home is run no more.
That's great.
Ah, that's so good, isn't it?
It's great. That's the trailer line, isn't it?
Yeah. Home is run
no
more.
Home is run no more.
Yeah.
It's just perfect.
And we've all felt like that from time to time.
Yeah. And it just even more draws you into these characters' plight, and you know it's not going to go perfectly well for them. And it's just you know, tugging at the heartstrings even more.
Yeah. Any other favourite moments from the three issues yourself?
I think that early sequence where they are attacking some vaguely defined like terrorist cell.
Yeah.
I think it's page, what are we looking at? Page six or six and seven, that double page spread where the bad guys are first taken out by the we three. And it's just a shot from the back of this terrorist being obliterated by bullets. And the bullets are like taking over most of that double page spread. That, so you almost have to like squint between them to see the guy just getting blown apart in extreme anatomical detail. And we've at this point, again, we've not seen the characters. We've just seen them as little shapes or little lights. And what we see is their effect and just how scary and formidable these things are. And it's just a completely arresting image to turn, like early in the comic, to turn that page. I remember it. I remember the moment turning the page and going, oh shit, this is something else. Like this, I've not seen this before.
Yeah. I mean, what a double page spread. What a moment. You look at it and at first you can't quite, as you say, work out what's going on. And then you sort of like look close and you realize that we're watching the bullets come towards us. And as you say, they've just obliterated this guy.
Yeah.
And it's such a great opening sequence because, as you say, we don't really see the animals other than just sort of shadows and blurs.
Yeah.
Again, the art of concealing.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So perfectly done. And these guys are like, you know, it's straight out of canon films. You know, very much like, it doesn't matter. Who are they?
Terrorists.
Don't worry about it. It's just, again, that's just the right amount of information. Right? They don't matter. What matters is establishing these creatures and what they can do.
Yeah. That's an amazing moment. Any others you wanted to pick out for us? I mean, as I say, I love Run No More, but
Run No More is great.
I picked that one already. Yeah,
the showdown at the end with the Weapon 4.
Yep,
the giant bulldog type of
spoilers. Creature. There turns out to be a fourth one.
Yeah, and he was kind of sent after them, and I don't know how spoilery we want to get, but certainly the bunny has a incredible moment of heroic sacrifice.
Yeah,
I think that's a bit of a kind of air punch moment.
And any moment when the cat suddenly appears,
the moment where the guys are in the helicopter and they're looking down at all the dead soldiers, and they're like, "What happened there?" And the helicopter driver is like, "Well, I'm glad we're up here." And then you cut to the cat hiding in the trees, like kind of zeroing in on the pilot, and he just fires a claw and just goes through the pilot's head. And the cat is that nastiness that the cat has, that sort of bit of delight that the cat has that the dog doesn't have.
Yeah.
You know, dogs don't kill a mouse and then leave it on your doorstep to show you, but a cat does.
Yeah. Other Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely collaborations then? I know, I mean, obviously the main one is going to be All-Star Superman.
Yeah, All-Stars Superman is fantastic. Pax Americana, did you ever read that?
Oh, yes, yeah.
That's almost like a step on from this as a formal exercise in messing around with time. I think it was shortly after, but it does it in an even more extreme way. It's one of those comics where, like, I've read it. I don't really know what it's about. I don't know if it's part of a larger story or something, but as a reading experience, it's just one amazing storytelling technique after another. So it's worth reading purely for that, even if you don't know what's going on in the wider story. But otherwise, it's what's the big one with the strong man?
Flex Mentallo.
Flex Mentallo is fantastic. Yeah. I haven't read that in years, but that's also a great story.
And I haven't read All-Star Superman for ages. I'm saving it for when it comes up on the book club.
That's just great.
That is just great.
It is a masterpiece. Yeah.
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 But then I read this last week and I thought, well, this is a masterpiece.
It is.
It's a three-issue masterpiece.
Perfectly formed. Because I'm hit and miss with Morrison. I always love the ideas. I think sometimes the execution, the idea is almost like overreach. I think sometimes that's time pressure. It's more in the regular monthly superhero comics. You can tell there's a big idea there, but it doesn't always land. But when he's good, he's really good. This is outstanding. I'm big, and Flex Mentallo, obviously. I'm a big fan of The Filth as well. That's a deeply, deeply weird book.
Yes. Yeah.
Really weird, but great.
Yeah. I mean, this is the perfect combination of Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, a perfect combination of words and pictures, as you say, doing stuff that you can only really do on the comic page. Yeah. But also taking that to such limits, you know, beyond pushing the envelope by Frank Quitely.
And it's all pencil on paper, you know, that's the magic of it, right?
Like, amazing.
It's as impressive as any Hollywood movie, maybe more so, because it's done with one guy's hand and some graphite.
Yeah. Just astonishing. I don't know. I looked on Comic Art Fans and I saw some sketches.
Hmm.
Based on We Three by Frank Quitely, I mean, but I didn't see any original art.
It's probably locked up in Jonathan Ross's, you know, I would imagine.
Well, there you go. Jonathan's probably got it, in which case he ought to be organising a public exhibition. yeah. But yes, all right. Okay, well, look, let's give you the fantasy budget. Let's say we can persuade Jonathan Ross to part with a few pages. Or a cover, what are you going to pick to have as your grail pages?
Yeah, it's going to have to be that first action sequence with the soldiers in the forest where we see that cat time for the first time.
Cat time.
Yeah. that would look very good on my wall. Maybe for a runner-up, actually, which I didn't mention, there's an amazing almost Dark Knight homage.
Oh, yes.
The cat sort of jumping into some heroic battle with the lightning in the background. That's pretty great. But no, I'll have cat time, which is funny because I'm a dog person.
But yes, the cat going into action and jumping between frames. Yeah, absolutely astonishing. I did like that. I mentioned it already. We talk about action film because the cat is almost like the perfect payoff. There's a scene where obviously the dog is getting the what's-its beaten out of it.
Yes.
And then suddenly the cat appears.
The cat is, you know, it's Han Solo turning up at the end, you know, in the Millennium Falcon. It's simple storytelling, isn't it? These are tropes that we've seen so many times. But like, it's a heroic sacrifice. It's the reluctant hero coming back at the end, whatever. But it's just done so well. And, you know, you're probably like, yes, you're cheering for it.
And it's three robot animals.
Yes. Yeah. who can barely talk.
Yeah.
No,
I'm great. Obviously going to pick. I mean, I thought you would pick Cat Time. I thought that is the double page spread that everybody talks about. But I'm going to pick, obviously, Run No More. Just for it's got a slight spoiler on it, obviously, with the reveal of what's happened to the man they've pulled from the river.
Yes.
But yeah, Run No More. Home is Run No More.
Home is Run No More.
Yeah. Fantastic. There's also, I suppose, the cover to the collection, which is a thing of beauty as well.
That is really lovely.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that's quite neon the colors again as well. It looks like it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I will post these images on the socials when this episode comes out in December. Just amazing stuff. It is short, three issues, but it is perfect.
Yeah. You read it in one sitting, you know, just go to a coffee shop, sit down, just read it in one go. It's just an experience. It's one of those ones you kind of look up and you forget where you were, you know? Like, it really is, it will transport you.
And I like what you said about being able to give it to a non-comic book reader and say, this is what comics can do.
Absolutely. I think that question comes up all the time. And this is one of my go-to answers.
Yeah. I mean, better than, you know, obviously people always say, don't give them Watchmen because, you know, you need all that comics backstory first.
Yeah.
But this one, perfect.
Yeah. You don't need to know anything. Just going cold, and you know, you'll have a good time.
So We Three is available now in a 20th anniversary deluxe edition for £18, £9 digitally. There's a £9 compact edition which will be out by the time this episode comes out, it's not been released yet, but it's another one of these DC compact editions. Be interesting to see what the color reproduction looks like in that.
Yes.
Might pick it up and have a look at it in the shop. And it is, you know, if you've not read it or if you've not read it for a while, We Three is just fantastic. Give it a go.
It also just, Coda, it's semi-adapted in Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3. Have you seen that?
Yes, yeah.
And Gunn has tacitly acknowledged it, but there's no mention of it in the credits and presumably no royalties. But the whole section with Rocket Raccoon and the other characters who have been experimented on, that is We Three.
Oh, of course, yes. Yes, all those poor deformed robot-animal hybrids that the High Evolutionary is doing. Yeah. Oh, that's heartbreaking stuff, that is.
It is. And James Gunn has for years wanted to adapt We Three into a film. So it's obviously on his mind. It's a deliberate thing. That's the closest thing to an adaptation that exists at the moment.
Oh, of course, yes. All those CG animals making me cry.
It's the best bit of the film.
Astonishing. Wow. Great stuff. Well, that is We Three by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. I hope we've done it justice, and I hope people do pick it up and read it. It is so wonderful. Zach, we turn to guest projects. Let's talk about your own comics. What have you got happening at the moment?
So I've got a bunch of stuff on my website. I do sort of action, comedy, B-movie infused stuff. And before the end of the year, I've got my comic. It's called Monkey Witness. It's the follow-up to... So I did this comic a couple of years ago called No Second Chance, which was basically an 80s action movie about a maverick cop called Chance Tempest. So I thought we'll do a follow-up, and it'll be an early 90s conspiracy thriller. So it's called Monkey Witness, and we get Chance Tempest having to team up with a monkey who can speak sign language to unravel a conspiracy involving the Yakuza in late 80s LA. So that's coming out pretty soon. And then also, actually, we've been doing this little side project within the ACP Slack. Well, actually, I'm not even talking about DUI. I'm talking about something else. I casually mentioned that in conversation about Predator, I said, oh, somebody should do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles versus Predator. And then someone said, go on, do it. I'll help you. So I said, all right. So I've written and penciled Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles versus Predator bootleg. And it's been inked by some Awesome Comics Pod all-stars. And that is finished. And just waiting for the cover. And that should be out pretty soon as well. So
fantastic.
Our fully legal bootleg.
Where can we find your comic, Zach?
Big Cartel, Zach Cahill at Big Cartel. Or you can find me on Patreon, Zach Cahill on Patreon, where I actually post stuff regularly. You can see stuff as it's being made. And then anytime I make something new, it gets posted out to the followers. So the Patreon's a good one. I write articles and stuff on there as well. So.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, look, I'll put links to both of those in the show notes for this episode on the website. And in all the socials when this episode comes out. Like I say, this is going to be the 14th of December. So you can buy We Three for somebody for Christmas.
Yes.
And also some Zach comics as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Read my one first or you'll be disappointed.
And the other project that I was alluding to that I thought you were talking about, of course, is Drawn Under the Influence Issue 4. For an anthology comic produced by the Awesome Comics podcast community, this time edited by Simon Russell. It's a charity comic. It's raising money for a comics charity this time, although I'm not sure if... I know Simon's got it down to two.
It's undecided. It's between two. It's between the Cartoon Museum and something else.
Yeah. But it's going to be raising money for a good cause. That will be available soon. And you've done something for that, Zach, haven't you?
I've done the cover.
Hooray!
Which I'm very excited about. So I suppose should leave as a surprise what it is. But I was happy with how it came out. And I don't know anything about the rest of the car. I can't wait to read it.
No.
There's some
Yeah,
really,
me
really
too.
cool stuff in there.
Yeah. I've got a little thing in there as well, would you
Oh,
believe?
amazing.
Yeah, Simon was very nice because he asked the former editors, myself and Sarah Harris, to write something for it. So we have done. So that, yeah, there'll be quite a few of the ACP community, and there'll be a few book clubbers in there,
Oh, great. Is it
including
going to get out before
yourself.
Christmas?
Yeah, I think so. I think
Oh,
that's the
great.
plan, yes.
Perfect.
If that is, hopefully I'll be able to put links to that in the show notes as well, so people can see what we're talking about and see your cover.
Yes.
You've told me the concept and it sounds fantastic, but we won't spoil it. We will try and hopefully link to this when it comes out. Brilliant stuff, Zach. Thank you so much for coming on the book club. And you'll have to give me your address and I'll send you. Oh, no, I already sent you your coaster, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did. I managed to, because we were swapping some comics, weren't we?
Oh yeah, send me the new Brubaker
Oh,
Phillips,
Brubaker and Phillips, that was
which
it.
I cannot wait. I've got my wife is out this weekend, and I'm going to go to the pub on my own and read the whole thing front to
Right.
back. That's the plan.
Right. Perfect. The new Brubaker and Phillips criminal book.
Yeah, can't wait.
Great. Thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Megacity Book Club. As ever, find us on megacitybookclub.com. Find all the links to Zach's work there. Find all of the Grail pages on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, Mastodon, and the 2080 forums, and hopefully on the ACP Slack as well. And if you want details of how to join this wonderful comics community at the Slack, or if you've got a book, a story, or a creator you want to talk about yourself, email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. So that's it. Until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book, hopefully something as good as We Three, although it's going to be a
It's
tough
a high
challenge.
bar. It's a high bar.
It's goodbye from me and.
Bye-bye from me. Why?